and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris and you're watching Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The seizure of Petronas assets as part of the $15 billion US dollar arbitration award to the descendants of the last Sultan of Sulu have highlighted the seriousness of their claim over Sabah. Now, there were reports as recently as December of last year of a purported plan to send an armed Sulu militia to invade Sabah. So what risks does Sabah face in this if this issue is not adequately and conclusively addressed? Joining me now is former Chief Minister of Sabah, Dato' Sri Panglima Shafi'i Afdal. Dato' Sri, thank you for being on the show today. Can we begin our conversation by looking at the most recent developments in the Sulu Sultanate claims? Has Putrajaya underestimated the seriousness of these descendants' claims over the territory?
Well, assalamualaikum warahmatullahi taala wabarakatuh. Melissa, it's a good day to you, and indeed I'm so pleased to be again with you all. It is indeed a very important issue that you have just asked me with regard to the security of the country, but at the same time, what is happening in Azerbaijan as well, the seize of the assets by Petronas. I think it is a wake-up call. I mean, I have been saying this. Always a wake-up call to everyone. I mean, we must be hands-on, you know, on so many things in this country to ensure that we can manage it properly so that the questions of not only our economic problem that we are currently facing must be up to the mark, you know, and let alone the security system in this country. I think that's indeed, there's a need for us. I have already raised this issue, not only in Parliament, in so many sessions. During my term when I was then in federal as a minister, similarly when I was then the chief minister of Sabah too. I think the need for us to beef up, enhance our capacity, building up to ensure that the security system will be there. I'm not saying that Sabah is not a safe place. It is indeed a safe place. But nevertheless, we can't take it for granted. I mean, incidents like what happened in Tandoan, that was 9-10 years ago. Nobody could imagine that they are there inside our country, and they were able to not only infiltrate, but casualty were there, and poor people, police personnel, and about more than 5 or 6, I think, died because of that incident. So I think it is indeed very crucial for us to take it seriously, the need for us to ensure that how better we can place all the resources, limited resources that we have, at the places where we need it most. It is indeed very unfortunate. I did indicate previously, even when I was then the Deputy Defence Minister too, to ensure that we have a forest kind of borderline, you know, in this part of the world, more than how many thousand kilometers. And then it is very important for us to not only patrol, but to ensure that a form of deterrence, we can realize that, placing all the radar, all the personnel at the right spot, the hotspot, so-called area, to ensure that we can realize a deterrent system so that the people outside can be well away. You know, if we talk about the security of a country, Melissa, there's two main forces. One is the external forces can cause the security of a country, but at the same time, the local, domestic as well. I mean, you have seen that in Ukraine, you know, the external forces coming from Russia. And that is quite clear. Whereas in our country, through Al-Mauna, you remember in way back in Perak, if I'm mistaken, there's an incident where they seized how many MS-16, you know, some responsible people, and that happened within our own country. So I think it must be managed properly, not only in terms of border control, you know, enhancing the security system in the country. It is indeed very important. Sabah is a very safe place, but we can't take it for granted. Just to cite an example, when I was then the chief minister of Sabah, you know, ESCOM was really in a very bad shape. I mean, they came to see me, the director of ESCOM, at one stage. They don't have enough, not only assets, but also funding to buy fuel, to do patrolling, you know. You can imagine. So I have to give them about $500,000 ringgit a year to ensure that they have enough money to buy fuel. I mean, don't tell me that these are not the central government, even for that matter, the Ministry of Defense or even the Ministry of Interior, Internal Security doesn't realize this at that level to ensure that right. How can we cater the needs of these people?
Well, if I may touch on the federal budget allocation for defense and security for Sabah, when you know, the Federation of Malaysia was formed in 1963. The federal government promised the residents of Sabah its full security and protection. Has that been true, you know, down the line in terms of resources? Has the allocations been proportionate to the risks that Sabah faces, that Sabah has to bear for the country?
Well, Malaysia, if you look into the size of the area, I mean, goodness. I mean, since independent, I mean, under Article 140, the I think Police Commissions 137, it is Armed Forces Council, and that is clearly spelled out under the Constitution. Responsibility for the security of the country is it is under the purview of the federal government. But unfortunately, if you look into it, I mean, the number, to cite an example, like RADA alone. You know, radar has been installed in most of the area where I think it is needed, strategic area locations. But unfortunately, 80%, I was made to understand, 80% of that asset is not functioning well. And how can you detect boat coming in from not only our neighboring countries like Philippines, Indonesia too? It is extremely difficult. When the, I mean, you have seen that, for example, like in the East Coast side, they were promises after promises, there will be a battalion. There'll be how many, end of the day, it's only about a few platoon of armed forces looking into some of the area in need of security protections. So I think when you talk about the funding allocated to particularly the state of Sabah, not as bad as Sarawak. You know, Sarawak is with no many incidents. But unfortunately, even the Air Force base is not there. I suggested then, when I was then the DVT defense minister, an Air Force kind of base in Tawau to ensure that, you know, surveillance can be done, not only through using of, you know, high-powered Sukhoi or other facilities, but heli as well. But unfortunately, you can imagine, there's none there. You know, if it is something that is only located in Labuan. So I think if you look into the area, it has been quite prone to all these sort of incidents, hijack and kidnapping, like Lahad Datu, like Kunag, you know, how many battalion do we have there? Okay. I mean,
I'm quite curious to know, given that there were reports as recently as December of last year of, you know, purported plans to invade Sabah to, you know, another Lahad Datu incident, are you concerned about any security threats? How would you like federal government to respond to these types, to these threats?
Well, I think the call for the central agency to take it serious, it has been there. It has been done by many, even during a parliament debate, even during a meeting within all the Menteri-Menteri Besar. I still remember during the BN government, similarly with all under PH as well, I did highlight the need for us to ensure that we can beef up all the security system, install the assets needed by those area. Unfortunately, I mean, you have seen, for example, like you have jet fighter in Lumut, you have jet fighter in Penang, you have so many infrastructure in Semenanjung, eh? Yeah, but you hardly get it. You have it in Sabah, but it's not in Kota Kinabalu, it is not in Tawau, it's not in Sendakan, it is located in Labuan. So you can imagine the distant way. You know, how fast can they react? You know, what sort of form of deterrence that we can do? I mean, I'm quite sure, I think we can't take lightly, though the area is safe. But nevertheless, I think we must have a comprehensive reform into the policy to ensure that, you know, assets must be located where it is indeed needed. But unfortunately, you know, this is not done since 1963. I mean, the security is under federal government. That's why we have been shouting about the 63 agreement, telling the federal authorities, whether it was during BN government or even PH government, I did indicate it's no question of getting out from getting independent. No, we love the country. but please fulfill what is embedded in the constitution, a promise that has been done before by our forefathers then, you know.
Okay,
security is very crucial.
So a security approach is definitely necessary, but what about addressing some of the security threats at its root? I'm wondering, Dato' Sri, what is hindering a concrete resolution once and for all over the issue of claiming the territory that, you know, particularly with the descendants of the last sultanate, with the government of the Philippines? Can you shed some light as to why we haven't been able for decades now to come to a concrete resolution?
Well, first thing first, because we have that sort of, I do agree that we don't recognize the claim done by the Sultan of Sulu. And in any way, I mean, that is not a sovereign kind of authority to claim over a sovereign nation like Malaysia, or even for that matter, Sabah as part and parcel of Malaysia too. But an incident like what happened then in Sipadan and Ligitan, when there was a claim done by Indonesia, I was in federal then with my uncle Tun Sekaran when he was then the Minister of Land and Cooperative. When that happened, we brought the matter to International Court of Justice. And then what did the International Court of Justice indicated there? Their judgment, jurisdiction is quite clear. Sipadan and Ligitan belong to Malaysia. And that was quite clear judgment. And that can be the basis for us to tell them off that gone are the days, the claim on Sabah, it is there, but at the same time, we can't take seriously. I mean, you can resolve international relations, not just to, of course, you don't recognize the claim, but how best we can address the issues through other means, economic trade ties, you know, with our neighboring countries to ensure that. It has never been there before, you know. I remember when our forefathers signed about how we formed Malaysia, and there was a consultation done by the late Tunku Abdul Rahman together with President of the Philippines, President of Indonesia, Soekarno at that time, you know. And at the end of the day, they did agree. And that's how the amount of 5,000 was realized and agreed upon. Yeah. Well, so I didn't know what happened then. It was a... somehow terminated in 2013, and it should have been dealt with. Of course, it is indeed very important the federal government to take it seriously. You know,
right.
Don't recognize the claim, but beef up the security of the place, which is mostly affected almost every now and then. You know, recently I spoke to the Chief Inspector General of Police, and also the Commissioner of Police of Sabah when he pronounced, you know, a curfew in the eastern part of Sabah. So I did tell them, I said, for God's sake, you know, there are other sectors that is going to be badly affected. Can you guys rebrand that? You know, because once you have a curfew there, I know security is very crucial indeed for us to ensure that we can beef it up and there's a form of deterrence. But you can rebrand it, enhance that. Well, you said this is no longer a curfew in that particular area, but enhance the, you know, security system in that area, mobilize the sort of like, you know, surveillance to be done every now and day.
Sri, can I ask you, how do the people of Sabah feel about these continuous curfews?
Well, of course, we do need that security system to be installed there. Surveillance must be done. But we are very concerned. Every now and then, when I go to the ground, they're telling us it's not, it's quite difficult because from 6 morning to 6 evening, you know, they can't go fishing as well, you know, because it's quite difficult unless you get the green light from the relevant authorities, because under curfew, there is a system where you can get it. But there's also danger of, you know, nearby area, for example, like hardly how many minutes can you cross the border? And how sure that we can sort of like do all the deterrence by doing all the patrolling in that particular area in that particular moment. So I think, of course, the people are very concerned about it because it's affected their livelihood. I mean, there has been kidnapping here and there, but what also concerned them is the tourism sector, which is badly affected. Because you talk about there's not enough money even to buy cooking oil. I mean, And that particular area, like Semporna, Sipadan, Ligitan, Sendakan, you know, dependent on some of the tourist, right, to come over, not only the foreign, but also the local tourists too. So I think how can we better address this issue if you can install a system to protect your own country, your own citizens? I mean, there you are. I was made to understand. In Kota Belud, you have this paradise camp supposed to be proposed. They call it paradise camp, you know, in Kota Belud, and costing about, I don't know how many millions of ringgit to be installed there. This is where I think the need for us to reform the policies, defense policy in this country. Place the asset where it is mostly needed. I mean, you don't have piracy in Lumut, you know. You don't have any kind of infiltrations in Subang. Jet fighters are there. Heli are there. But I'm not saying that move them out from Subang. But please, you know, can you give some allocations of funding into this particular area? Because security is very important. It is one of the utmost top priority of any countries in the world.
Understood. Datuk Sri, thank you so much for talking to us today. Former Chief Minister of Sabah, Datuk Sri Panglima Shafiq Abdal there. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Now, recent headlines about the asset seizures by the successors in interest to the last Sultan of Sulu have highlighted not just the seriousness of this territorial dispute, but also the security threats borne by the eastern Malaysian regions on the island of Borneo. Now, to discuss this further, we have on the other end of this call Fikri A. Rahman. He is Head of Foreign Affairs at the Research Institute Bait al-Amanah. Fikri, thanks for joining us. You recently co-wrote an article in which you called for renewed attention to Malaysia's Borneo provinces. You argued that there are growing threats, particularly non-traditional security threats. And I thought we could begin there. Help us understand what you mean by this. What are these non-traditional security threats and where are they coming from?
Thank you very much, Melissa, for having me. So basically, non-traditional security threat is something that has been done by non-state actors. And currently, we are seeing there's a lot of reports reporting on the East Malaysia security, especially on the threat on terrorism and cross-border crime, kidnap for ransom, and also illegal immigrant. And currently, we can see that there's a growing activities made by Abu Sayyaf Group. And that kind of activities by the terrorist group has led to multiple curfews in S zone, including seven districts, Kunak, Sadakan, Tawau, Lahad, Datu. So these curfews, dusk till dawn, 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. has been initiated to curb the cross-border activities, especially the threat from Abu Sayyaf Group. Although we can see that the threat has been manageable since especially during the pandemic, but it currently, since last year, since the activity has been grown since then. So that's why the curfew has been done. And also there's a report, intelligence report, saying that Sabah has been used as a transit point for Indonesian militants to go to Philippines via Sabah for their terrorist activities. So this is kind of worrying, considering that terrorism has been growing near our borders. And also we can see that previously we have Lahad Datu incursion by Jamalul Kiram. And this is a turning point for East Malaysia security to act against growing threat, also future threats that led to the ESCOM initiation. So we also have a kid, kidnapped for ransom since... Yeah, okay, thank you.
I do want to just very quickly jump in there. You talked about S-Zone, the Eastern Sabah Security Zone, and the curfews, that the continuous imposition of curfews within that region. Has that been successful in reducing some of these non-traditional security threats? As you mentioned, kidnapping for ransom and armed robberies and the like.
Currently, our threat has been manageable. I mean, there's no kidnap for ransom activities or acts since early 2020. And but again, the curfews was aimed to mitigate the threat instead of... because there's a report that the threat is growing, but there will the curfews was to prevent from X to happen. So okay. Yeah, technically the threat is still manageable in Malaysia security, but it is growing.
The threat is still there. So you said mitigating these threats, not addressing the root causes of the threat. And you talked about the Lahad Datu incursion, following which the government had set up ESCOM, the Eastern Sabah Security Command. Is ESCOM effective in your opinion?
Yeah, ESCOM has been effective, although there has been criticism by towards ESCOM on prevent the cross-border crime. But technically, ESCOM has been done a really good job. The issues is currently ESCOM needs to be enhanced by the government in terms of enhancing the assets and given a proper fund to empower ESCOM. I think last year's report has mentioned that ESCOM commander has mentioned that ESCOM needs a good amount of asset and also enhance assets in order for ESCOM to do better in patrolling our East Coast borders.
Okay, so has the budget allocations increased for, you know, proportionate to, as you say, the growing threats, the risks that Sabah has to bear?
I don't think, because on budget 2022, current budget is 26, and there's a decreasing from 2021. So it's like 26 million to patrol and to do intelligence at the East Coast Sabah. So I think it is not enough for ESCOM to do the patrolling, also to do the intelligence, especially since the threat is growing. And also, I think cross-border crime and so transnational group will deploy more technological advance in their activities. And also, we can see that illegal immigrants will be coming, the numbers will be growing. So funds is needed, but considering that we are having currently a pandemic and also global economic downturn, so we might be seeing, for now, on ESCOM, we might be seeing that there's not much fund will be injected on right. ESCOM.
Well, okay, so in that, you know, again, funds are stretched across all sectors of the country. But given the threats that Sabah face, I'm just wondering, you know, particularly in the eastern side of Sabah, which is quite unique compared to other states, you know, other areas in Malaysia, I wonder whether there might be other non-military approaches that can help manage cross-border crime. You know, the fact that maybe not just increasing military personnel or tightening border security, policing the border, very porous border, I might add, those are not just the only ways to tackle some of these non-traditional security threats. Are there non-military approaches that you think might be applicable to the Sabah situation?
Yeah, I think first military might is still important on ESCOM and also TCA between Malaysia, Indonesia, and also the Philippines. But we can
TCA being the type trilateral
cooperative arrangement. It has been enhanced this year by Datuk Seri Shamuddin. So it is a good thing because it is has been elevated into the ministerial engagement, ministerial cooperation, because the last arrangement between the ministerial is 2018. So it is currently 2022. It's a good thing. And they might be seeing a potential expansion to Brunei, as been reported on the discussion by Datuk Seri Shamuddin. So it is a good thing. On softer approach, I think we can try to empowering the local communities, village security, and also development communities in order to instill nationalism among the Sabahan to cut the ties on the between communities, because there's a kinship variable when it comes to illegal immigrants. They come from they come to Sabah because of the kinship. So we need to instill the nationalistic approach to the Sabahan in order to curb the cross-border crime and also illegal immigrants. This is important because otherwise it is quite difficult to penetrate isolated areas without engaging with local communities and empowering them through local villages, through leaders.
Okay, so that's quite interesting because you're absolutely right. There is this sense of kinship. There's this historical, cultural, and family ties that go back, you know, many decades, centuries even. Can I ask you then, in particular, you know, with this internal conflict and civil war within southern Sulu region of Philippines. How might that, how might non-military approaches be applicable to that? We've seen into the headlines recently with the Sulu descendant claim over the territory, reclaiming the territory of Sabah, as they say. You know, what? How would that impact security approaches, particularly non-military security approaches? What would you suggest the federal government take into consideration when thinking about these security approaches?
I think on Sabah, we're having a problem with Philippines before on claiming and others. And also Lahat Datu Engagement is one of the things. So what can be done now, again, is to empower the local communities. I mean, that this is a collective effort between all the government agencies and ministries to have a concrete initiative in order to curb the East Malaysia security threat by looking at the military and non-military might. And again, when it comes to kinship and others, non-traditional security, it is important for the government to look into the people, to the grassroots of the leaders, and empower them, not just empower, but to educate them and also to enhance their infrastructure there. Because I believe that when it comes to great infrastructure, will help to curb cross-border crimes. And it has been done at the other parts of the region. I mean, and other parts of the world in conflict areas. So it is important for the government not only to educate but to empower and enhance the infrastructure in that area in order to help curbing the threat.
Fikri, thank you so much for joining me on the show. Fikri A. Rahman, therefore, from the Research Institute Bait Al-Amanah. That wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.